Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
You just never know who's going to drop in when they leave the doors open. Joining me in studio, what a surprise visit. We've got Pinal County Sheriff and Senate candidate Mark Lamb. Thanks for doing this,
man. Oh, thank you for having me. It's
great
a pleasure.
To see you. And your wife is here. That's added surprise.
I wasn't going to leave here until I got a chance to say hello to you.
You were in doing an interview in the building for a podcast later on, but I want to talk to you about a few things. We just got done talking about immigration, and you and I were a part of an event where we had a wide array of opinions on the immigration issue. You've got to be more frustrated than most that this is broken and it's not being fixed.
Yeah, we're frustrated because it's broken for the people that do want to follow the law and come here. We just got through talking about some of those examples. And then what's broken, I mean, because we're just letting anybody and everybody come in and they're breaking the law. I think all of us agree that we want people to come to America and make a better life for themselves. And we want people to be able to have a common sense path for that. But we're just letting everybody else in.
How frustrated are you? And I just got done talking about this. I've been a Republican my whole life, and I know you have been as well. But there's got to be some level of frustration with our party in the sense that the House is controlled by the Republicans. They've passed a piece of legislation that went to the Senate. The Senate won't act on it. But it seems like there's not enough action on actual solutions to the problems. There just seems to be a lot of rhetoric on the issue and not really much getting done.
That's what I just was talking with on this podcast. You know, we talked about how the fact is they're putting band-aids on the problems, but they're not actually fixing the problem. We keep wanting to spend money, and that bill that they were trying to run, this whole border bill, which wasn't a border bill, it was a global assistance bill, but it was designed to just continue to throw money at the back end of it as opposed to fixing the front end of it. And the way we fix the front end of it is we've got to secure our southern border, take control of it, vet people coming to this country. We don't allow people that have false asylum claims to come in, and we can't let the drugs flow in unabated either. These are all problems that we're facing, but it starts because we continue to try to fix problems way down the road, the symptoms of it, as opposed to actually treating the actual problem.
I thought of you. I saw a story. I think we talked about it either yesterday morning or this morning. The House came out with a report that said China is funding the fentanyl crisis in the U.S. And I thought, really? the issue for you in dealing with this, I know we're laughing about it, but what you must, can you just give us a couple of stories of what you've witnessed? Just with that fentanyl crisis, what's coming across the border, the overdoses, and what is the danger it's putting your people in?
Well, I'm not even laughing at the problem. I'm laughing at the fact that they're barely acknowledging it. I mean, look, we've been saying for 3 years that China has been feeding this. You know, in 2018, we had zero M30 fentanyl pill seizures in Pinal County. 2019, we had 677 pills. In 2020, we had over 200,000 pills. In 2021, we had 1.2 million pills. And in 2022, we had 1.4 million pills. So, yeah, we had a real problem. And we kept saying China is handing these drugs off to the cartels. The cartels are bringing it in. The leading cause of death in America right now amongst Americans between the ages of 18 to 45 is fentanyl poisonings. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about national security. When we talk about terrorism, we always think of it as a bomb going off or as a plane crashing into a building or somebody walking into a crowded building and shooting it up. And I've been saying lately, we are under a terrorist attack, and it looks like fentanyl. It's a quiet killer. It's killing Americans every day. No army has ever had success killing Americans like fentanyl has, and is coming from China and being put into the hands of the cartels.
One of the arguments, and I think that there is some substance to the argument, is that the Americans' appetite for this fentanyl, that we know that there are people that are addicts, that with other drugs, they have a chance at a life by getting off the drugs, but with this drug, one bad dose of this drug in their life is over.
Right.
What do we do with the Americans that have the appetite for it, but what about the Americans that are trafficking in it?
And that's what's happening. It's majority Americans now because the cartels are making so much money that they're able to employ Americans. I keep hearing that I went to Congress and they were saying, well, a lot of the people being arrested for smuggling humans and drugs are Americans. And I said, how do you say that like that's okay? I say that's a bigger problem because these transnational criminal organizations have so much money they can employ the Americans. But as far as dealing with the demand of it, you're right. Americans are demanding it, so they're filling the needs. but it's so prevalent that it's about at 10 cents a pill. And here's the thing, you cannot mop the bathroom floor. If you want to fix the demand problem and the drug addiction problem in America, you cannot mop that floor until you turn off the tub water. And we know where the water's coming from. It's coming from south of the border. The cartels are bringing the fentanyl in.
Something I heard you say at the last time we were in an event together, and I want you to, if you'll tell us a little bit of this story, you've lived all over the world. So you have seen this problem at different stages in your life in different countries. Can you talk about some of the places you lived and what's kind of led you to the opinions you have now? Because people see you, you're the Pinal County Sheriff, the cowboy hat. And so there's an opinion there that's out there of this all-American guy, but you've lived all over the world.
Yeah, I was born and raised on the Big Island in Hilo, Hawaii. Then when I was 11, we moved to the Philippines. And then for a few years during my junior high and high school years, we moved back to Arizona. My dad was from Chandler, but then we moved to Panama. I spent majority of my time in Panama. Then I lived in Argentina. And so while I look, you know, I got the cowboy hat and I'm a cowboy at heart and I believe in traditional values and common sense. But at the same time, I understand what's going on across the world. I've spent time, I've visited other countries. I've lived in other countries and I know exactly what's going on. And I know how great America is. America is the greatest country, but if we continue to allow what's going on, we won't be the greatest country anymore, and we won't be the place where you can find freedom and make the best of your life. We've got to protect that. This is the Alamo of freedom, and why I'm so strong on the border and fighting against fentanyl is because if we don't, we're in big trouble.
What does the balance look like for you? Because I've said on the air many times, I don't think there's anybody that is more pro-legal immigration than I am, and I know you feel the same way. So what is the balance? We want to have open arms. We want to be the shining city on the hill. Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. How do we balance? Because it's my opinion that we call everybody a migrant now, and we're using the phrase newcomer, that it's kind of tainted this, and it's a bad look for the legal immigrants. What's the balance that we have a thriving legal immigration system while we're trying to stop illegal immigration? How do we do that?
You know, it's part of the reason I'm running for the U.S. Senate, because Senate and Congress have failed year after year after year. We're continuing to talk about this. I think it's become a fundraising issue every 2 years, and Washington, D.C. has failed to fix it. And what it does is it opens it up for the cartels and the everybody else to make money, and they're using people to do it, whether it's the people that are trying to come here to make a better life. They're doing it illegal, and the cartels are encouraging them to do it. Our government is encouraging them with funding NGOs that are encouraging them these things. The problems are very deep, and they start in Washington, D.C. And we could fix this problem very easily, and we could put some common sense stuff in place and use the resources within immigration and naturalization to actually process legitimate requests to come to this country, people who will benefit our country, as opposed to leaving it open and allowing people to break our law or make false asylum claims and put a really heavy burden on our economical system, on our legal system. The problems go on and on, but it's got to start in D.C. We've got to fix those problems and make it more common sense, because I, like you, believe that if somebody wants to come here and we think they could be a great citizen here, we should have a process in place that allows them to do it without the cartels making money, without other people benefiting from it.
Would you be in favor of a guest worker program that people applied for outside of the U.S., matched up with a job in the U.S., and we're not talking about just the big visas for the high-tech jobs, but whether it's construction or working class people are more thriving, do you believe that might slow down some of the false asylum claims if they had an easier path to come here to work?
Yes and no.
Okay.
It's so bad right now that people are just trying to cut the line. And people don't know. A lot of these people are not educated. They're not professional people in their own countries. They've been told by the cartels, if you come here, we'll get you into this country. Just bring $5,000 with you. And if you don't have it, don't worry. You can pay us on credit. And then they extort those people. So a lot of that won't stop until we weaken the cartels, until we really take control of the southern border. But I do agree that if we had some work visa programs, that would certainly help. And we should be doing that. You know, I've been to Yuma, been to a lot of these places where they need that workforce to come in. And I can guarantee you there's a lot of employers out here would love to fill the some positions they have, but we've got to have a common sense place. But you're never, they're still going to, as long as we have broken border policies, which this administration does, we're going to continue to have people being taken advantage of.
Last question, because I know that you deal with this and it's the ugliest part of this, and it's the human trafficking part. Whether it's young people being forced into the drug trade or young women being forced into the sex trade, we've got almost 100,000 kids that are unaccounted for that came across the border unaccompanied. Can you talk about you having to address that issue of human trafficking and how ugly it is?
We deal with it every day. We had a pursuit the other day. We stopped this car, and while we were talking to the guy, it wasn't adding up. And all of a sudden, when we asked if we could search the car, he took off. We pursued him. We popped three of his tires with stop sticks. He was still going 80 miles per hour on the rims. We finally pitted him, got him off. And when we finally stopped, we hear this pounding on the trunk. We open it up, and there was an illegal juvenile in the trunk that we believe was there against his will. This is what's going on in America. I think slavery, not to take away from what happened hundreds of years ago in this country, but slavery is as prolific now as it's ever been. And what's sad is a lot of that slavery is sex trade. The sex trade here in America is out of control. And whether it's the women that are being trafficked, the children that are being trafficked, we got a real problem in this country. And having an open border is only filling that need, that disgusting and perverse need that people have. And I'm very concerned, and we as Americans can do better than this, and we should do better than this, but it takes some people with some courage and some fortitude to say, look, this isn't right, we need to fix it, but we're going to go through some painful times before we get it fixed.
Sheriff, I appreciate you dropping in. It's always great to see you.
Always good seeing you.
All right, Sheriff Mark Lamb from Pinal County is joining us. We'll be back here in a minute with Did You Hear This?
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's get caught up on the biggest news stories of the day. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
The head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, Patrick DeHaan, explains what the contributing factors are in the rising Arizona gas prices.
Folks like warm temperatures. They like the sunshine. Population has gone through the roof. Where that plays a role is that the pipelines that run from refineries in California to Phoenix are being outgrown by the population increase. You need to get more gasoline into the market because there's more cars on the road.
How do we keep up with infrastructure as more people move to Arizona?
I think that's a great question. And when he talked about the pipelines not being sufficient to get enough gas here into the valley, we always talk about when there's issues in refining and delivery. Well, that's a delivery issue. And I think the biggest thing I learned from him today is that if we don't stay on top of our infrastructure needs, if we are not able to pump enough of the gasoline into the valley, you couple that with the pipelines that's sufficient for the needs that are growing in Arizona, along with going with the blend of fuel that's more readily available, it may not lower prices all the time, but it certainly will stop the volatility in the market and the big spikes that we've seen in the past. So that's what I learned from more than anything else. Staying on top of the infrastructure is something that we definitely need to do, and I'm hoping that the state understands that and local jurisdictions understand that, and we're staying on top of it.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is facing backlash over a package of four bills that includes funding for Israel and Ukraine.
Speaker Johnson told House Republicans he wants to bring all four bills on aid for Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, and a grab bag of GOP policy priorities, including banning TikTok, to the House floor together for a vote this week.
Is Speaker Johnson bringing these bills to the floor vote the right way?
Matt, I don't like when things are brought together. If they're individual bills being voted on individually, I think the American people get better service that way. When they combine bills, usually it is done to expedite the process. I understand the way it's supposed to be. That's the issue. Is what's supposed to be is, if we know we're going to have a vote on these things, let's put them together. Let's have one vote. Let's simplify the process. Let's make it easier. But on something as important as foreign aid, how much money for Israel? How soon? What are the restrictions, limitations, and oversight? Same thing with Ukraine. Those things are so important, I think they needed to be voted on separately. So I don't like things being packaged together, and I think maybe the pushback is when you want to see things done individually and know how people vote, that's an important way to go, and I wish they would go that route on this. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at 11:20 to catch you up on the big news headlines.
Former President Donald Trump is in New York for day two of his hush money trial. The judge ruled that Trump has to be present in court for the duration of the trial, which will likely last weeks. ABC News reporter Jay O'Brien says this could have an impact on his campaign trail.
The legal troubles have helped him so far in a way by rallying his supporters. I'm the victim. But for the first time, we're now seeing lengthy proceedings that he must be at and he cannot leave.
How will this trial impact independent voters in the November election?
Well, out of sight, out of mind is always true in the political world that you need to be out there. You need to be out in front of multiple people, which is why these elections are so important. I don't care if you're running for a district race, a county race, or a statewide race, or a nationwide race like the presidency. You've got to be in front of supporters. You've got to be out there on the campaign trail. So I think in that regard, just his absence is going to hurt him at a very important time, especially when his opponent is going to be out on the campaign trail, laying out his case for the things that he has done and laying out his case for the things he wants to do. So yes, I think this can be detrimental, if not to his reputation because of the legal troubles, certainly by his lack of visibility at an important time in the election. I think it is going to take its toll.
There is controversy at the University of Southern California after the school announced a pro-Palestinian valedictorian will be banned from speaking at next month's commencement.
USC is citing safety concerns and deciding that Osna Tabassum, valedictorian majoring in biomedical engineering and minoring in resistance to genocide, will not be allowed to speak at USC's graduation after questions were raised about her pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel views. There are demands for USC to reverse its decision. The move by USC has angered some students.
Is this a First Amendment issue?
Yeah, I'm a little confused by this. But if you're going to use that platform as a valedictorian to espouse political views, we know that that's not the right thing to do. We've heard about people not being able to espouse their religious views. I think there has to be, we have to temper some people's attitudes. But telling somebody they can't speak when they've earned the right to speak isn't the right thing either. Again, I am not a pro-Palestinian sympathizer. I don't like that they're shutting down bridges. I don't like the chance of death to America in some groups. I don't like the death to Israel chance, but I also understand that the First Amendment is a protected right. USC, if they have security concerns, should address the security concerns, but shutting somebody down for a political view is not a good look on a university. Even if I completely disregard or disagree with their stance, I think they have a right to speak. Hey, great job, Julia, as always. Coming up, what we're going to do at 11:35, we're going to go back to the economy. We're going to talk about taxes and what you pay and how what the rich in this country and the businesses in this country pay directly affect your paycheck. We'll talk about it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Appreciate you being here. We're talking about this. Yesterday was tax day. It had me thinking about taxes. I have a lot of differing opinions on this. I think many of us do pretty strong opinions. I've got friends. This is the part of it I wish people understood. And so maybe this is something redundant to you and you've been thinking about this for years. But this is what's frustrating to me. I grew up from a majority of certainly my formative years without anything. I mean, my mom was very poor, but she worked very hard. We weren't homeless, but my mother was very poor. She watched every dollar she made. There was no extra money in our house. But when I worked for people. And for whatever reason, I think it's because of her work ethic. I have a strong work ethic. I'm proud of my work ethic. I'm proud of the work I've done. I've always identified with the work I've done. I identified as an electrician. I was a good electrician in this business. I've made promises to my bosses that no one is going to outwork me, and I've kept that promise. That doesn't mean I'm going to be the best at it. That doesn't mean I'm going to be the best broadcaster or whatever. But no one's going to work harder at this job than I do. I made that promise, and I'm proud that I've kept it. And I've watched a lot of my friends who started out like I did, whether it's by necessity or otherwise, that have gone into their business without anything. And I've watched them or they've told me about when they made big mistakes. I had a friend who was millions of dollars in debt in his business and was bailed out, got borrowed money, was able to get out from under, rebuilt his business to become very successful, and then was able to put money aside and is now doing very well for himself. The extreme amount of money that is taken away from him every year in taxes, in my opinion, is obscene. The fact that we have a fairly large segment of this society that believes that they don't pay their fair share because they're able to buy nice houses and nice cars and go on vacations and do things they want now, we're never there for the journey. With the journey that has sleepless nights and the journey that has repercussions where people are looking at their life and saying, you know, I may not make it through this financially, where an employee gets fired from a job or a business goes out of business, they go find another job. And this person is left picking up the pieces and sometimes dealing with the fallout of a failed business and huge amounts of debt and everything else. The risk is incredible. The sleepless nights and the pain sometimes in building something and almost losing it or losing it is extreme. And when you become successful, you should be able to reap those benefits and not feel like society blames you for problems and says you should be paying more. That's one side of it. The other side of it is this. If you look at how governments pay, and look at what they're able to do. If you have a federal job, if you have a job with the federal government, the paid holidays and the benefit packages and the sick days and the pension and all of these other benefits that they're afforded to you by working a government job, that's fantastic. Do you not believe that most business owners would love to be able to offer that to their employees? It's easier for the government because they can run at a deficit. The federal government can run at a $34 trillion deficit and continue to pay its bills, and nobody's putting them out of business, and they're not at risk because they don't have a bottom line they have to watch. Local municipalities, the city of Phoenix, I've been very complimentary about some things they've done at the city of Phoenix. But when the city of Phoenix, as in debt as a lot of people are, and as in debt as the city might be with the state money changing, the city of Phoenix decided 6 months ago or whatever it was on a prevailing wage law, which means they are telling people bidding city jobs, city contracts, that we are going to force you to pay your people more money, which means we know as a city, we're going to pay more money for the project. They're going to pay 20 to 25% more to build a project because they have told contractors charge us more. That's what they are doing with this prevailing wage job or this law. So the city is talking about setting tax money aside next year in case they have a budget shortfall because millions of dollars that were directed by the state might not be directed by the state, but they've committed to spending millions of dollars more in a prevailing wage law that makes no sense. They can afford to have these big bonuses, or they can have big sign-on bonuses, or they can have big salaries and huge benefit packages because they're taking tax dollars to do it. If they had to be a slave to the bottom line. So what I'm saying is if small business owners were keeping more of their own money, they would be giving it to their employees. They would have the money to give you a raise. And when you say, well, some people won't, and you're right, some people won't. But the people that won't are the people that are going to lose their good employees, because there are going to be a lot of employers that will. You look at how busy construction has been here in Arizona. And as I've said many times, being able to keep up with the hourly wage, many companies can't do that. So you get creative. You do a sign-on bonus or you do a retention bonus. You say to somebody when you hire them, if you come to work for 90 days, for 3 months, and you don't miss a day for 3 months, we're going to give you $1,000 cash. You're going to get a cash bonus of $1,000. For showing up every day for 3 months. So you're going to get your regular paycheck. And if you show up for work every day for 3 months, you get $1,000. It's a way to keep people because the construction industry has been so busy and so strapped for qualified labor that when you get somebody qualified for the job, you do everything you can to keep them. And it's like that across multiple industries. When you arbitrarily raise the minimum wage, when the government acts in that way and you cost people more money, you cost their bottom line, they lay people off because businesses have got to remain profitable. And just like you, if you were going to sell a car or sell a house or whatever it is, or take a job, you would not tolerate it if an employer said to you, I know the job that you're applying for is worth $20 an hour, but I can only pay you 18. You're going to go get 20 somewhere else, and it doesn't make you greedy for getting what value you can to be as profitable as you can. The class warfare argument bothers me because it stops us from looking at the entities in government that we elect to manage our money that believe they're doing the right thing by people by overspending. They overspend your money. It's, again, I've used this analogy many times because I've given credit cards to people that work for me. It's like having an employee and giving them a company credit card, and now all of a sudden they're big spenders. They take their employees out to nice places. They tip 35% because the waitress was great. They do all of these things because they're not paying the bill. They're just signing it. There's a big difference. In the taxation on the American people, we are overtaxed. Everybody is overtaxed. We ought to be able to look at this and say to the government, back off collectively, instead of the class warfare party politics that's controlling the day right now. To me, that is part of the biggest issue that we face. All right, we're going to hit on some of the big topics of the day, and we're going to find out what's going on in the Chris and Joe show coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks for being here as we roll into, it is Tuesday, correct? It is our Tuesday?
Yeah, I think it's only Tuesday.
Chris Merrill is here with me from the Chris and Joe Show, 2 to 4 p.m. here on KTAR News.
Yeah, man.
Talked to Joe yesterday. I always ask, what are you guys working on? What are the big news stories for you guys? So what is it today? What's the big topic?
Sometimes we don't always address the big one. We'll address something we can dive into. And I think the one that we're going to spend a little time on today is, you saw that Hollywood Hobbs vetoed the bill that would have required schools to develop a cell phone and social media plan. Yeah. So she vetoed that. And Tom Horn is all upset. The school superintendent, he's all upset about that, and how dare she do this. And Hobbs says, we already have a law that says schools have to develop a technology and internet policy.
Yeah, she said it was unnecessary.
Yeah. So we'll dive a little bit into that, because we also spent a lot of time talking about some of the youth violence that's going on in the Valley, and so much of that tied back to social media, cell phone use, where it's appropriate, where it's inappropriate, and that kind of thing. So I think there are some perspectives and some nuances here, and I think some of that all gets lost when the politicians just start lobbing accusations at each other.
Yeah, but a part of the issue for me, I think, is when the superintendent is done, when the teacher is leaving, like an exit interview. Mm-hmm. Number one reason teachers are leaving the profession is no money. They're not making enough money.
Right.
Which I think we all agree, teachers, you want to keep good people. I'm a capitalist. If you want to keep good people,
You pay them. Yeah.
The other reason, though, is lack of discipline. They don't feel supported by the administration. And mm-hmm. I think a part of that issue, I watched a video today. Do you ever go to the Daily Caller website?
No.
Check it out.
No, God, no.
The Daily Caller website.
No.
Why?
No, I'm good.
Why?
I prefer news.
Yeah, but there's some fun content on that, okay, on that website. They had a video today of a kid, and I can't remember where it was, and he looks to me like about 12 or 13 years old.
Uh-huh.
Open hand slap his teacher in the face.
Yeah, that's gonna stop.
And then slapped her again with the left hand.
We should pass a law that prohibits that.
No, what we should do is not let a kid be that bad in school that he gets bold enough to slap a teacher in the face.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I think all that starts at home. And I think that if you were to, here's where I run into a problem, is that we go, oh my goodness, this kid slapped the teacher in the face. We should pass more laws that say kids can't slap their teachers in the face. But wouldn't you and I both agree that there's already laws that say you can't slap somebody else?
I do.
Right. So suppose somebody were to put forth a bill that said it's the no slap your teacher in the face bill. Like, who's going to oppose that? Nobody would, because we're all like, yeah, of course you shouldn't slap your teacher in the face. And then it lands on the governor's desk, who happens to be in an opposition party from not only the superintendent, but also the majority of the legislature. And she goes, we already have laws. I'll veto this one. So not only do you have grandstanding by the legislature, but you also have grandstanding by the, because everybody supports the bill that the legislature is putting through, even though it's unnecessary. And then you've got grandstanding by the governor that won't sign the bill, because she just wants to play political games with the legislature on a widely popular bill. So we're seeing the same thing with cell phones right now, too. I don't know what the solution is, to be honest. Be better. We should pass a law that says be better parents.
But is there any kind of, is there an advantage to uniformity? Is there an advantage to having a statewide standard in that all the school districts must at least abide by this minimum?
I guess that depends on where you stand on a large centralized government.
Right.
If you believe that a large centralized government is the best solution, we create uniformity regardless of somebody's individual needs, then yeah. If you believe that each school district has the best ability to be able to handle their own business, then you would say that it's remained at the school district level.
And there's, and this is where the question for me is always about, I always say, if there's a legislator that ran that said, the first thing I'm going to ask when someone brings me a piece of legislation is this any of our business? Is somebody that I would probably put my support behind. Because we know they get involved in things that aren't any of their business. Yeah. But we also understand that if you have a requirement for a minimum standard, it's not always a bad thing. It doesn't take away flexibility. So I'm just wondering, in this instance, was this a good idea? I don't even know that if you're not right, that it wasn't something that was redundant to what we already have.
Well, according to the governor's statement, it said it was redundant. So again, we're taking her word for it. But also you have the school that says, no, you have to do this because if we don't do this, then there's no restrictions. And I know that's not right.
Right.
So yeah, what's the real answer is we got to wade through the nonsense that's coming out of the politicians' mouths.
What else? You're not going to do that for 2 hours.
Oh, God, we haven't gotten that far.
Really, you're not?
You know,
it's going to be a surprise to all of us?
We're weighing a couple of different things. I don't know how much we want to talk about politics, because the whole abortion
Caitlin Clark going first in the WNBA.
Oh, yeah, did you see? She's going to be making a ton of money. She's going to make upwards of, like, middle management dollars.
She is.
Like, $75,000 a year, the number one overall pick.
Leaving college and taking a pay cut.
Isn't that crazy?
It is.
And thank goodness for endorsements.
Yeah.
Well, she'll have those endorsements in the pros, too. Yeah. Thank goodness. Because otherwise, what's the point?
Absolutely. All right. It's the Chris and Joe Show. It is 2 to 4 here on KTAR News. We are out. We are just about out of time. Hope you'll listen again tomorrow. We started just after 8 a.m. here on the Mike Broomhead Show. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. Spend part of it with me tomorrow. Until then, God bless.